Welcome to The Right Chamber,
the podcast where we dive deep into the fascinating world of medicine and healthcare.
In every episode, we will talk about pivotal topics relating to medicine and surgery in the UK and what it's like to be a healthcare professional today. We are inviting doctors and other healthcare professionals across different specialties to discuss their experiences and give an insight into what their journey has been like. Please follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media. So sit back, ignore the traffic, and enjoy the Right Chamber podcast.
Robert Louis is a registered nurse with deep roots in renal care, mastering dialysis treatments and training clinicians along the way. He supported medical device training and clinical skills education at the Dudley Group. After earning a City and Guilds teaching qualifications in 2023, he's now set on advancing his teaching with a PG cert in higher education. Welcome back to the Right Chamber podcast. I'm Jaspreet and I have Victor and...
I'm Robert Louis.
Rob is one of our clinical skills educators. So Rob, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, good. So I'm a nurse by background. I've been a nurse since 2004, so quite a while. Always learning. I've been a renal nurse. So started off in renal and doing dialysis, hemodialysis, peritoneal dialysis and pre-dialysis. And throughout my nursing career, I've always enjoyed mentoring and learning and teaching others. So I had a strong interest in education and started off as the medical device trainer for the trust.
Okay.
And progressed into the clinical skills, which is now the clinical education team as an educator.
Brilliant. So teaching's always been kind of part of you all throughout since the start of your training and working. That's brilliant.
Absolutely. I really enjoy it. And it doesn't feel like a job. It's more of a passion, and what you get from giving to others as well as receiving, always learning and improving.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even since like working as a teaching fellow, it's just so good to see someone come in and then you've had this teaching session and then they leave with a new found understanding, and I find that so rewarding. So yeah, definitely know where you're coming from there. Tell us a little bit about the education, clinical education department.
Yes. So with the clinical education team, we used to be known as the clinical skills team. Currently, within our team, there's 11 members of staff. So we have our line manager, Margaret Cooksey, who originally set up the team. And the service with now Professor Raymond. We've got two senior educators. We've got our educators, including myself, and we've also got the administrator, and we've got Simon, who's our technician, who helps set up and maintain our equipment and service. Our team is responsible for undergrad and postgrad. So that includes our medical students, and we also do training postgrad for FY1s and FY2s, and registrars and onwards. And we do courses for the nursing staff as well within the trust, and CSWs as well, the clinical support workers.
And around kind of when, or what was the kind of vision on how it all started? Did it start at the same time as the undergraduate teaching centre, or just tell us a bit about the history?
Yeah, well, I know my line manager Margaret Cooksey's been at the team since it started, and she did a lot of work setting it up and developing as the other members have as well. But originally, I think it was more from a nursing base, but now it's expanded, and the trust have got professional development as well that are over the nurses and the AHP. So we're working in conjunction with the undergrad centre, with the CTS and yourselves, to support our medical students which is really exciting because it's changing as well, some of the curriculum. And we've got University of Birmingham, Aston University, we've got Worcester as well. And we've got our students from different levels and also different skills that are coming on board. So it's really exciting.
So what kind of skills do you help the medical students with?
So our medical students will do different skills based on their curriculum on the years. But third years, for instance, semester one, they'll be doing venipuncture, they'll do swabs, they'll do injections, subcut, intramuscular. And then as they progress to the semester two, we've got intravenous therapy, so preparing parenteral administration. We do boluses and infusion setups. And they also do more advanced skills as they go through the years, the fourth and fifth years. So with our senior educators as well, we do ABG sampling, insertion of NG tube insertion, wound care, and then we have the CTFs that support with the suturing as well with the wound care.
So I assume it's not just the technical aspects of the skills that you teach to medical students.
No, no. Yeah, we do a simulation support, but then with our team, we support with time out with the students. So we have set up a service. So we support medical students and physician associates within the trust where we go out with the students, they get allocated time and we have additional support.
That's really good.
We'll go to the clinical areas, we'll do various skills, but also seeing the patient and getting the students comfortable with communicating and being in the clinical setting, giving them the confidence, giving them feedback and coaching throughout as well.
Oh, that's amazing. Because, yeah, it's definitely like... it's a different skill. It's one thing to practice on the mannequin and get comfortable doing the different skills on the mannequin, but then just having that support there and someone to supervise you to actually then go to the bedside and, you know, get real world experiences of the skills. I think that's an amazing thing that that your team offers. Is that something that you've always had, or is it some new innovations? And
I think it's something that's developed over the years. I've been with the team just coming up to 4 years, and it's expanded, and we've managed to build up relationships with the different departments, and we've got one of our educators, Lynn, supports the vaccination program for the trust.
Okay.
She also supports with the students, as the other educators will be allocated time so we can be with the students so they can get their intramuscular injections covered. So
going back to timeout, is that for students like struggling with the procedures, or is that just part of their curriculum that they have to have like a timeout, or is it if they haven't finished off certain procedures, haven't had their sign off, so you allocate them this time out to take them onto the wards and
so like support can anyone
them?
Just do it, or
yes so the students will be allocated time on their curriculum, so they'll usually have at least two allocated, so they'll be out with the educators depending on the firm size. Usually have four on average in a firm, so we'll go out with half of the firm for an hour and a half. And then we'll go out with the second half of the firm for the remaining hour and a half. So we have 3 hour slots, and we'll go out with them at least twice and more if they have additional needs or support that they need. And that's also excluding other learning environments. So they'll have vaccination sign-ups depending on that time of the year, which runs through from October right up to the end of March. We cover that. We also have the pre-assessment department where students can sign up, and we'll be supporting them as educators. So they can do venipuncture, 12 lead ECGs, and they'll do swabs as well, MRSA swabs. And we have other environments as well, such as SDEC, the same day emergency care area, where students can sign up as well. And it's not just about skills, it's getting that clinical time that learning.
Learning how to speak to patients, gain consent.
Yeah, some of those skills can be really tough to find, especially for the students. I mean, I remember my student days. You know, you can, first of all, you know, it's hard to, because you always feel like everyone is kind of doing important things, and I'm just here as the student. But you know, it's good to show the students that you are here to learn, and we are here to teach you. Some of these things like intramuscular injections can be so tough to find because you're trying to track down exactly, you know, most medications are given IV or taken orally. So it's always kind of difficult to track. So having that opportunity where students can perhaps join the vaccination clinic, that is really, really useful because then they can get there.
Yeah, because it's like, done. You know, it's sorted out for them to, you know, because I think a lot of them can get it done at their GPs, but if they can't, then they have an option of doing it at the hospital.
Yeah, and I don't think that's something that's offered everywhere either.
No, but it's not very common on the wards either. So it's very hard for them to get it on the wards.
Yeah, we recommend to students as well, but if they want to have the vaccination themselves, then to wait. And they can, if their colleague wants to do their vaccination and they have agreement, they want to do theirs, you know, not saying they have to have the vaccination, but it certainly helps. And the educators as well, if some of us want to have a vaccination, we'll let the students do us as well.
Yeah. I think I let one of the students do my vaccination as well.
No, but it was a very important clinic because the students were asked to talk about the risks and, you know, side effects of the vaccine before they injected their patients. So I think that was also very good for like clinical communication skills.
Yes. Yeah. So we're not just looking at the skills, the whole procedure and speaking to the patient, gaining consent and the risks. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. So as well as kind of lots of support for our students. You mentioned the lots that you do with our resident doctors as well as some of the nursing staff. So can you talk a little bit about?
Yes, certainly. From a postgraduate with medical staff, the courses are developing. We support facilitated setting up courses with our technician, Simon, but we also deliver courses. So I know my colleague Karen, one of the other educators, we do trust grade and IMT skill sessions, refresher sessions, which run usually every month. It's a two-day program where staff new to the trust can go and they can get refreshed skills. So we'll go through related to the trust processes as well and the equipment we use. So they'll do venipuncture, cannulation, 12-lead ECG. They'll do blood gas sampling and get the analyzer, which I know the medical staff are always keen because they get their barcode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you always have to beg for it then. It's like, by then it's like clotted.
So we try and make things as slick as possible. And it's a nice balance of a little bit of theory refresh, but that emphasis on the practicing the skill.
Yeah.
I think it's so important for doctors or nursing staff who have moved from another trust or even the locally employed doctors who are moving from other countries to give them a little, you know, a session about how the trust works and how even just having a different cannula all of a sudden.
Even just from the skills point of view, like I remember, so I trained down south at the University of Exeter. And our hospital there, even though a lot of the things we, you know, with the whole UK MLA coming into place, things are trying to be more standardized across university. But even with that, from hospital to hospital, equipment will be different. You know, you plug things in slightly differently. So it can be a little bit daunting if you're moving from one trust to the next. So having that, those kind of introductory sessions just to orientate everyone to know how our equipment might be unique or different to what they have seen before. And so I think that's really important. One thing I think I have observed, which I think is really amazing as well, is that you really do like stick to the evidence base of the teaching. It's not just like, oh yeah, well, you can do that because they do that on the ward, you know, you can, oh yeah, you can do it this way. It's not quite right, you know, but actually we follow to the letter, yes, the evidence, and how things should be done. And I think that's amazing to just have that basis to start from.
Yeah, I think within our team, with Lyd from Margaret, we have a strong kind of governance process where policies, practices are reviewed with best license practice. But also as educators, we get train the trainer, and we get assessed peer assessment as well every year. So we keep our skills, as well as going out clinically with students and supporting the trust with different capacity issues. So we're all singing from the same sheet and doing the best practice. And we demonstrate that when we're in practice as well with the students.
And it's so important for like learners to have like that safe environment to learn.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's when you learn best. So, you know, make the mistakes on the mannequin, get comfortable with the skill, and then be supervised as you then kind of transfer those to, like, skills and go to the ward. And then eventually you become independent and competent to do it.
You were a renal nurse. Yeah. So what made you get into, I of course you had like this passion of education, but how did you come across this job?
So I started as a cadet initially. So
cadets.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. I was a cadet for 2 years, and I can remember because we used to wear a mint green uniform, so it was quite standout. And I went to do my nurse training at New Cross, which is now the University of Wolverhampton, the nursing course. And I always loved working on the wards, and I quite liked the routine. I think I was always more of a medical nurse. I liked the medical side more, and I worked on the renal wards then, and I used to see patients going off throughout the day, and they say, oh, they're going to the renal unit. And I was always quite interested, well, what's actually going on with this dialysis? And once I went for an interview and they said there was jobs in the renal unit, I really took to it and always enjoyed the dialysis side, but also that close relationship with the patients and the rapport. And I find it very, I did my renal course, and even now there's the advancements and the changes. When we used to do dialysis machines, we used to think how technical it was. Or I used to, when I first started, I thought, this is incredible. But things have improved so much, you know, patients are doing the machines themselves now. So it's ever changing.
Well, that's good. And then that's kind of transitioning at some point then, you realized, actually, this teaching thing is so good. I want to do more more of this. Do you know, can you remember back to kind of when that?
I think it was because we try and involve the patients as much as possible with their dialysis and take ownership. And some patients would set their machines up originally, so we'd support and train. And then when they started needling themselves with fistulas, and then setting up home hemodialysis training. So I always got that passion. And I remember students coming to the department, medical students, and I don't know why, I used to get nominated to do some teaching with them, and I just loved it. And it just gave me the bug. I just carried on and really enjoying it.
Brilliant. And I want to ask, what's your favorite thing about working as a clinical educator now, if you had to? It's a hard one, isn't it?
I think it is that moment when you see the student get something, and you see, and you can see their eyes light up, and you think, I feel part of it. You
know? They do. Yeah.
And what's like the biggest challenge that you face?
I think, like everyone, it's utilizing our resources as best we can. Obviously our team has got bigger, but it's the student numbers as well
are also growing.
Things have expanded. Mm-hmm. So post grad we do a lot more courses, like we've got the Trust ATLS, the Start course, the Med Reg Day, so we have lots of different courses. So it's just trying to work as best as a team. And I know we've got our senior educators, Rachel and Helena, who do a lot of the management, and Sarah Fullwood as well. So, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Managing everything can be tough. We've got growing number of students and growing number of resident doctors. So yeah, it's kind of evolving with the time and adapting the teaching. I think that's one of the exciting things of teaching, to be honest. It's not always done the same way. You kind of adapt to how, well, new evidence that come up, but then also as numbers grow, you might have to adapt something slightly just to accommodate for that.
Do you have any tips for, like, maybe nursing students, staff nurses, senior nurses, on how to become a clinical skills educator or give them the motivation to become one?
I think if you love learning and you've got a passion for helping others, then you know, the sky's the limit. Anyone can do clinical education if you really like it and you've really got a passion to do it. I would just, you know, say keep learning, keep maintaining high standards, and reassuring and supporting your colleagues. I think if you're approachable, you know, it rubs off and people will gravitate to you, and you can share things and learn and help each other. Yeah,
amazing.
I think that's very important, to be approachable, because students need that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
especially coming into a new hospital, starting their clinical placements when they've never worked in a clinical area before. So I think that's a very, very good point, to be approachable.
Yeah, I was going to ask that, but, like, you know, if you have any tips for perhaps that student who's struggling with something, but then they're not quite sure who to go to or how best to approach, what would you say to a student like that?
So with the students from the clinical education team, they'll be in their firms and they'll have educators allocated to the firms. So reach out to your educators. We're all there to support the students anyway. So if an educator's off and you need help immediately, you know, get in touch with us. Come over. There's always somebody in the office.
Yeah.
Between
always a friendly.
Yeah. 7:30 and 5:30. Pretty much every day we're there. And don't wait. You know, if you've got a problem or an issue, come and see us earlier so we can help you and manage it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't leave it. We're there to support, and we want to see people succeed, and we want to drive the service forward.
From my part, I think I've learned a lot as well about the education team and what we offer. And I think that just the last point really brings it home, doesn't it? Don't wait if you feel there's something you need some extra help with. There are lots of friendly faces. Trust me, for anyone listening to the podcast, just give a knock on the door and you'll see what we mean. And there are people there waiting to help and support.
So thank you for coming to the podcast, Rob.
Thank you very, very much. We really do appreciate it. I think lots of people will benefit from just knowing about this department that's tied and works hand in hand with the undergraduate teaching centre, but then also with the postgraduate centre as well. So yeah, and thank you to everyone that's been listening to the podcast. I hope you've grabbed one or two things from that. If you would like to appear on any future episode, as usual, feel free to contact us on any of the RGUC platforms. And also, if you have any questions for either our team or the clinical education team, also interact with us, post a comment, or just let us know if there's anything you would like to contribute, and we would be happy to keep an eye out for that as well. Alrighty.
Thank you very much.
See you next time.
Thank you very much. See you next time.
Remember to stay connected with us on social media. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media, for more exclusive content and updates. Thanks for tuning in to the Right Chamber podcast. Until next time.